Hey, Lux, thanks for being a guest on the Changing Lenses podcast. How are you doing today?
Hi, Rosie. Thanks for having me. I'm all right. I'm sitting on a soft bed to do this podcast because I'm in a little bit of pain, as per usual. But other than that, all right.
Yeah. I'm glad you're on a soft bed. My bed is stripped right now because I leaked all over it this morning, which made me even later than usual. Scramble around, try to shove everything in the laundry machine and figure out how I'm going to like make up all the time. But I'm sorry to hear you're in pain.
Yeah, I'm sorry to hear about your morning. The stripes and struggles never end.
No kidding. But, you know, I think because I'm not in pain, but I'm feeling all bloated and mucky and I just don't feel like standing around doing presentations. I'm going to call in, I think, and ask my boss for a day off. I mean, that makes sense, right? Isn't that what sick days are for?
Totally. Yeah, I definitely think that they would just give you the day off, no problem. Say that that's a great idea. Take care of yourself.
Yeah, especially, you know, the CEO, the male boss, right? Like, totally. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, all my male bosses have always given me lots of time off for my period.
Mm-hmm. And they love to talk about it, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
Said no boss in corporate North America ever. Jedi friends and visionaries, if you are still with us, thank you for being here. I am Rosie Young. I'm the host of Changing Lenses. And no, it is not normal for me to open a podcast episode with an improv with my guest. But you know what else isn't normal? Talking openly about our periods. That's right. Aunt Flo, that time of the month. Menstruation. Conversations like the one Lux and I just had might happen in our heads or in a very private chat with our best friend, but never in a professional setting. Did you know that, quote, on average, a woman menstruates for about 7 years during their lifetime? Yet, as normal as it is, menstruation is stigmatized around the world. That is from an article published by UNICEF, which is linked in the show notes if you want to check that out. So have you ever noticed that such a normal and necessary biological function is carefully hush-hushed in the workplace? When I worked in an office, I would tuck my pad in the waistband of my pants when I went to the washroom rather than bringing my purse with me so it wouldn't look like I needed to change my pad. Periods are such a taboo topic that I actually felt more comfortable telling my female boss that I have a mental illness than saying I have period cramps. But folks, pods and tampons and leaks and PMS are just the tip of a very big iceberg when it comes to the way periods and period pain are stigmatized. If you menstruate and you don't like talking about it or want to talk about it, that's okay. I'm not saying we should all be sharing the details with our colleagues at the lunch table. What I am saying is it should be okay to talk about it if we want to. Think about this. Western society is patriarchal, established through colonization and reinforced through capitalism. Exactly who are the people who feel uncomfortable hearing about menstruation? If our society was matriarchal, which some indigenous and non-European cultures are, would we be forcing ourselves to go to work with cramps or migraines or worse? As Lex says in one of her awesome Instagram posts, and I quote, "Stop making people on their periods go to work and act like we're not passing a blood clot mid-conversation." Oh my gosh, I think women everywhere know we've been there. Which is why I am beyond excited that Lux is graciously here to have a real conversation about discrimination against menstruation. Lux Perry is the co-founder of the company Somedays, providing safe, natural, and effective period pain relief products. Lux themselves struggled with debilitating pain for 15 years until they were formally diagnosed with endometriosis in 2021 and finally able to get surgery. Lux's pronouns are they, them, and they worked in muscle recovery before Somedays, which is what the pain relief products are based on. Now, before Lux, I didn't know my own period privilege. I'd never heard of endometriosis or period discrimination until I saw Lux and their co-founder Dominique on TV pitching Somedays on Dragon's Den. On national TV, Lux shared that their period pain almost got them kicked out of school, and Dominique said her period pain almost got her fired from her job. This was a Jedi moment for me and changed my lens on how I see periods. If you're new to Changing Lenses, Jedi is my acronym for justice, equity, decolonization, and inclusion. My life goal is to be a Jedi coach, helping people with privilege dismantle systemic inequity while helping people without privilege survive it. Well, when it comes to period pain, I'm definitely in the privileged category. So Lux, I am so grateful that you're here today to educate all of us on the ways that people with periods are not being treated equitably and inclusively, and also to encourage people with period pain to survive and even thrive as you have. Thank you for being here.
Thanks so much for having me. It's really a dream come true in some weird ways to be able to talk about my period pain every day and all day.
Not just some days?
Not just some days. I always joke about how if somebody had told my like 14-year-old self that in 15, 20 years, I would be talking to large amounts of people on a very national and public stage about my period pain, I would have been absolutely mortified. Now I forget that it's even stigmatized because I speak about it all the time. Everybody and their dog is coming to me about their period problems. And so my whole life revolves around it. And so it's so deeply destigmatized in my body now that I really want to share that with other people.
I can't wait to hear more about that. And I love the fact that it is normalized for you. Like, this is how it should be because a period is a normal thing. Mm-hmm. I hope that we can all get there. Hopefully by the end of this podcast, we'll have moved a little bit further towards destigmatizing in our own bodies to talk about our periods. So I shared a little bit about you, but I mean, like anybody, they are much more than just a 2-second introduction. You've already started talking a bit about your story, but I wonder if you could tell us whatever you feel comfortable sharing about yourself. And I think particularly how you did go from somebody who would never have imagined talking about this openly to now feeling completely comfortable talking about this.
Well, I went through a lot of different phases in my journey to acceptance and to destigmatization or normalization. And I think it started when I was younger with the gift of my mother, who also had endometriosis. And so I always had somebody around me who did validate me. Every doctor, every specialist, professional that I saw, superior in school, like all my teachers, principals, bosses, nobody was able to validate me except my mom. And that is a gift that I am deeply, deeply grateful for. And so having that partner essentially throughout my life led me to continue to fight, even if it was quietly and with professionals in that specific field. And then eventually those injustices add up. And so the weight became heavier and heavier. And when I realized that it was almost impossible for me to work a regular job, or it was impossible, it led me to entrepreneurship. And then entrepreneurship taught me all sorts of other things about how to respect our time and our bodies. As an entrepreneur, as I'm sure you know, it is very, very easy to burn yourself out, to put those pressures on yourself even more than a boss would. And so that was sort of when I started to realize the intersections of capitalism and my pain and my period in general, and that capitalism was actually influencing the way that I was disrespecting my body. And for me, disrespecting my body meant not listening to it, hating it. I literally would scream and cry and say that I hated parts of my body because I felt like they were torturing me. And it wasn't really until I realized that anger was misplaced, that the anger was actually about the lack of validation and care that I received when I was in so much pain. And so there's like these two parallel journeys happening of me normalizing the conversation around period pain so that I could speak about it more and find more help, essentially, but also at the same time, denormalizing pain. So trying to normalize the conversation of periods and then denormalize this idea that we are just supposed to be in pain, that that's just part of our lives. That's part of the curse of being a quote unquote woman. And that's rooted in all sorts of like misogynistic Western beliefs. And so, yeah, there's lots of waves on that journey to figuring out or to coming to terms with the fact that we've been wronged for a really, really long time.
Okay. There is, I'm glad we're going to do a transcript on this because there is so, so much stuff there that is empowering. Empowering to hear you say, and things that we've just, yeah, what we've normalized shouldn't have been normalized at all. Mm-hmm. I should also give a little bit of a trigger warning to any listener who may themselves be experiencing period pain or have gone through stuff, because First of all, I appreciate you being able to share so vulnerably and openly, Lex, with your journey. And I want this to be a place where we can talk openly about it. But I recognize some people may have trauma or may just be triggered and aren't ready to hear this conversation. So please, for you, if you feel that way, take care of yourself. Don't listen to this. We are going to be talking openly about period pain and endometriosis. And, you know, I just want to make this a safe space for you as well, Lux. So I'm committing to you that wearing a lens of a woman, a cisgendered straight woman who never had endometriosis, I am here to listen and just share this space with you out of love and respect. And your story matters, and I want people to hear it today. So I'm glad that you're in a place where you feel comfortable sharing, because I think it will empower others and be a role model for others. Maybe if we could start, because honestly, I feel like I had never knew the word endometriosis until maybe I saw your episode on Dragon's Den, and now I feel like I hear it all the time, or kind of like that when you buy a yellow car and you see yellow cars everywhere. So for people who don't know, can you tell us from your perspective, just what is it that you go through so we can appreciate better what you have to deal with?
So endometriosis can affect everybody differently, but the primary identifier is chronic pain, essentially, or extreme pain. It's one of the most, it's in the top 20 most painful diseases in the world, and there's no cure. So there's really not much they can do for you, which we can attribute to the lack of funding for women's health research, mm-hmm. the disproportionate funding. And then essentially what it's meant for me, I can only speak for myself, is that I started having debilitating, crippling pain when I was 13. So ended up in emergency rooms from just the most intense abdominal pain you could imagine. I've had to pull over on the side of the road and roll around in the back of my vehicle for an hour because I can't see or talk or do anything other than scream. I've had two incidences. I was brought to the hospital by ambulance one time this year. Where I was feeling totally fine and I asked my partner to pour a bath. And in between the time that I asked them to pour a bath and the bath was poured, I was collapsed on the floor and turning blue because I had had a cyst rupture. So you can have endometrial lesions or endometriomas, which is sort of like a cyst, but a little bit different, on your ovaries and things like that. And they can rupture or pull down your ovary, which is connected to all sorts of nerves. There's a lot of nerve pain happening. I collapsed on the emergency room floor this year. I thought I had visions that I was going to die. I never felt so close to death. And then the doctor accused me of being addicted to narcotics, and that's why I was there. So I was unable to get timely help because it's dismissed all the time. Abdominal pain in quote unquote women is viewed as period pain, and that therefore viewed as not non-emergent, non-serious, and not worth investigating. And so it's really just like such a struggle of being in such intense, incredible pain all the time. And then coupling that with people knowing absolutely nothing about the disease and being absolutely uninterested in investigating what's causing you that pain, simply because it's located in your abdomen.
I am shaking my head in, it shouldn't be disbelief, but it is disbelief. Like this, because this is not a brand new disease that has just been discovered in the last year, right? Like, mm-hmm. Do you have a sense of how common it is that people are affected by endometriosis?
Yeah. So endometriosis affects 1 in 10 people with a uterus.
That's a lot.
Which is incredibly a lot. So for some perspective, that's more people than prostate cancer, breast cancer, and heart disease combined. So there are run for the cures, t-shirts, wristbands, big events, all sorts of, you know, fundraising campaigns and awareness campaigns for those diseases, and tons of specialists. And then in the endometriosis category, there's almost nothing, which is why I think that it's important to talk about women when we talk about endometriosis. So I'd love to segue into how that intersects with gender. And because we talk about it a lot at Some Days, that absolutely not everybody that has a period is a woman. Not everybody that has endometriosis is a woman. I am not a woman, and I talk about these things all the time. But it's very, very important that we recognize that the reason that there is such a lack of understanding, awareness, and validation around this disease is because it's primarily women. So the roots of that are that women have long been dismissed as hysterical when they're talking about health concerns. There's a significant lack of funding and research in women's health. So even though many people, many different genders or anybody on the gender spectrum can experience this disease, the reason that the problems exist is because of misogyny and because it primarily affects women.
And this is something I'm learning from you. You're right. We associate menstruation with women, so we would associate period pain with women as well. What do we need to change our lens on who else, if they don't identify as women? I've seen some really interesting photos on your Instagram. And if anyone doesn't already follow Lux on her Instagram or Someday's Instagram, go and check it out. It is amazing and inspiring. But there are what looks like to be men with period stains on their underwear on the Instagram account. So who should we be thinking of when we think of people who menstruate?
Literally anybody. Because now there are so many, obviously because of access to new healthcare and a little bit of increased social acceptance, it's still not normalized completely. But the increased social awareness around transness means that there are more trans people in our lives than we know, and that periods and endometriosis exist within every part of the gender spectrum. And they have found endometriosis in cisgendered men. So even people without uteruses, it can be found, endometriosis can be found anywhere in your body, even though it's primarily found in the abdomen. It's been found in every single major organ of the body. So it really does not discriminate based on gender or sex.
And this, I mean, I love that you brought up earlier around colonization and our patriarchal society and capitalism, because people, you won't necessarily automatically associate capitalism with women's issues or menstrual equity, but it is all tied together in the way discrimination actually plays out. So our binary thinking around women menstruate and that's it, and we don't consider any other gender identities, that's, you know, a problem. So that's one way that discrimination happens and we can start changing that. But I, even when you describe her horrible experiences with the pain, you talked before about almost being kicked out of school. So this discrimination doesn't just happen in the workplace. It has started as soon as you basically got your period, because that's what's associated with. Can you just describe for us so we understand the magnitude of what happens? How is it that you almost got kicked out of school just for having an illness?
Well, because endometriosis is really hard to diagnose. You can't get diagnosed without a surgery. Doctors don't want to give you surgery. So when you first start to experience the effects or the symptoms of endometriosis, you don't have any language for it. So it's just viewed as period pain, just quote unquote, because people do not care about period pain. So when I was in high school, I also did not want to tell anybody ever about period pain or talk about my period. And so I had to come up with other excuses for why I wasn't making it to school. My mom knew, validated, didn't care. Really fortunate for that acceptance at home. So I didn't have the like two-pronged thing where your parents are also like, why are you not going to school? But I made up every excuse under the sun. Sometimes I say that my period pain taught me how to lie, because I really, really had to get creative with why I couldn't go to school all the time. So it was like a headache or an abdominal muscle or a cold or whatever it was that I could come up with. And my school started to catch on, being like, you've missed more days than you've attended this year, which is the reality of endometriosis. It creates chronic inflammation in your body. So often people with endometriosis or period pain, because it usually has a root cause in inflammation, have coexisting issues, other issues. So I had chronic pain all through school, all through high school. And so when I stopped going, my school gave me an attendance contract and said, you have to sign this. And if you miss another day, you're expelled. And I had no choice. So I signed it and I missed another day. And they were like, well, we're going to have to expel you. And I begged to stay in school. I told them a little bit about what was going on, but they don't care. They think that's more of an excuse. And then I also was an athlete. And so I missed sporting events and my coaches hated that and had a similar approach of like, if you miss one more practice, you can't play in the game. So it was just like consequences stacking up on top of each other and further isolating me when I already was only able to attend high school probably about 25% of the time.
Wow. And it's funny too that we're now in a COVID place where back when you were in school, we were not doing Zoom school. And now this is what I always go back to too, is all these things that people say, it's impossible. We could never do it that way. right? So I'm sure that the teachers, all the other teachers who wanted to kick you out would have been like, of course you have to physically be in school. How else are you going to learn?
Absolutely.
Turns out, actually, you don't have to physically be in school. And like you said, you studied at home, right? So the problem wasn't necessarily that you were not learning. The problem was that the teachers, well, what do you think? Like, what do you think was behind their adamant, like, thing that you have to be in school?
I think it's ableism, to be frank. And so, I mean, a lot of the a large part of the disability community, disabled community, is coming out now and saying, we've been begging for these accommodations and these measures and this access to the workplace or school forever. And they've just told us repeatedly that it can't be done. It's not possible. It diminishes the quality, et cetera. But now that there's some like extenuating circumstance, like the pandemic, the whole world has got on board with these accommodations. And so it can be a bit hurtful for those of us that have suffered from these rules or these regulations or this like stiffness around cultural norms that have now just been tossed out the window and everybody understands it. And so, yeah, I think that in school, people couldn't understand or validate that maybe there was a real reason that this person can't physically make it to school because they do not have a disability or a chronic illness. And so they don't consider, they don't have any capacity to understand what that means to not be able to make it somewhere, and therefore a lack of compassion. So they were not interested in like, what's going on for you? You know, like as a kid, I was scared. I was chronically ill all the time. And nobody asked me at all. They just said, we don't want you here if you can't follow these rules.
I love that you brought in the ableism piece because still, especially in the diversity, equity, and inclusion world, the DEI world, there's a growing awareness about ableism and accommodating, I don't like that word, but accommodating people with disabilities, but it's still only really the visible disabilities or the majority disabilities are the ones that are more commonly acceptable that get considered. And so what you're describing sounds to me like it's invisible because we can't see your uterus and it's chronic, but because it's invisible, we don't know that it's going on. And something I learned last year from a different podcast guest was about episodic disabilities. So it sounds like it's chronic, but it isn't necessarily every day. And if it's in the day, it may not be all 24 hours of a day. And so there are ways, if anyone's interested, it's episode number 212, talking about episodic disabilities. You can take a listen to that. So we talked about your school, and the school is one thing where they want you to be there every single day, otherwise you won't learn according to the rules. What about at work, and maybe drawing also on Dominique's or other people's experience, but for you as well, how did you or didn't you experience accommodation and inclusion at work?
I can say with confidence that I've never experienced any accommodation or inclusion in any workplace that I did not facilitate at any point, at any job. And I can vouch that Dominique has experienced the same. It's just not in the realm of understanding of people. If you don't have this issue, you don't know how to accommodate it. One time I had to send a picture of myself in the hospital to my boss so that he would stop angry texting me about showing up to work. Yeah, there's never been anything. The only way that I've ever been able to experience or access any sort of flexibility around my work schedule was by becoming an entrepreneur, which you'll see also on my Instagram. There's a post about, I don't think people understand how many quote unquote women are driven to entrepreneurship because of disability or illness, chronic illness. It's shaped my entire life. It's shaped who I am as a person. It's shaped the way that I think. I also have a blog about that on our website about how chronic pain really taught me all of the skills that I needed in order to become a good entrepreneur. And in some ways, that's sad, but it's also how I've learned to cope with my illness and how I've learned to channel that for myself. I don't think that all people with disabilities and chronic illness do not owe us success or productivity or anything. They are entitled to full, healthy, dignified lives, regardless of their output. And so I'm not trying to model myself as a person with a disability who's managed to somehow participate in capitalism in a way that benefits me. But it's very, very hard to balance work and disabilities.
I can imagine some people might need a different type of trigger warning, because when we talk about capitalism and how it has been discriminatory, or just how the system of capitalism is not healthy and is an exclusive system, but I don't know that they would make the connection. Can you maybe help tie it together for people? What you mean when you say that this, a capitalistic society is contributing to bias and oppression of many things, but including people with endometriosis?
Yeah. So when I talk about the intersections of capitalism and disability or chronic illness or the dismissal of pain, it's based on the principle that capitalism only values your productivity, and barely, it barely values your productivity because you're not even being compensated properly. But essentially, it teaches us from the time we are born that our worth is rooted in our ability to produce something. And so for those of us that struggle with either physical disabilities, mental health, illness, pain, whatever it is, even if it's like a disrupting event in your life, that prevents us from participating in that way or from producing in a way that we are expected or that we place those expectations on ourselves, it is very difficult to find self-worth. And other people also treat you the same way. So people view you through the lens of what you're able to produce. How successful are you? How successful are you at your job? How much money do you make? Do you have a nice house, etc.? And so capitalism absolutely plays a large role in the unnecessary pressure that we put on ourselves to perform, when what we should actually be doing is taking care of our bodies and listening to our bodies and acknowledging what's happening in them and taking the time that we need, as opposed to trying to perform all the time.
Yes, you're hitting for me too how there is no room to take care of ourselves. Like you said, the listening to our body, there's no time or room for that because that doesn't produce dollars in a capitalistic model at the end of the day.
Yeah, for somebody else. Nobody's making money off you when you're napping. You know, you're not on social media, you're not consuming ads, you're not producing content for somebody, you're not creating some sort of money producing environment. So they want you to do as little of that as possible. And by they, I mean capitalism, like the people actually profiting from capitalism. Like Jeff Bezos doesn't want you napping. He doesn't even want his employees going to the bathroom because it doesn't make him money.
Yes, that's right. Well, he's skyrocketing off to Mars or wherever he's going. Yep.
Yes.
You're listening to the Changing Lenses podcast, shifting our worldview on business and work by looking through a Jedi lens. We'll get right back to the episode after this short message. Friend, are you resonating with this episode? Maybe you're going through a slow and frustrating job search. Maybe you don't have mentors or career coaches you can relate to who understand the racial, cultural, and gender barriers you face. If so, I feel you. I know what it's like to survive, succeed, and struggle in the Western business world as a Chinese-Canadian immigrant woman. I've been hired 7 times, fired once, and done it all on the other side as a people manager and executive recruiter. Through it all, I really wished I had someone from a racialized background who could support me. That's why I created an online coaching program to support people with their job search and emotional needs in a system that discriminates against them. Just click on the link in the show notes that says, "Help me survive the search," to access insider knowledge from a racialized recovering recruiter. That's me. I can't wait to see you there. Well, I want to kind of, I mean, this is really good context and background, because I think it's important for us to understand the issue and all the issues that come with it because of intersectionality with all the different things that are happening. I think that what Sumdaze is doing is a great example of how to start turning this narrative around. And for organizations and people in the organizations who want to, now that they know about this, like, okay, well, what can we do? Let's start talking about how we can be different and what we can do. Like, one thing I was talking about capitalism, I love that on one of the posts, again, on your Instagram account, somebody was complaining about the price of Sumdaze products. And I remember that post said, yes, thank you for your input. And the reason why our products cost what they're actually worth is because we're paying people not, you know, minimum wage, but living wages. And so that all goes into the cost of the product. And I'm thinking, yes, if we actually pay people what not just that they deserve, but what they need to survive, everything would cost more. But that means consumers and the end users have to accept that too. We can't just be buying Amazon products who, you know, Amazon doesn't treat people very well. So what are some ways that you could suggest, like even thinking about how your boss angry texting you and you had to send a picture of yourself from the hospital, which my HR hat is like, that feels like an invasion of privacy, but okay. Like you, totally. You now run a company. How would you advise employers that they can accommodate different abilities and including period pain that will still allow them to run a business? Cause you do it.
So some of the things that we do are, was we moved into a space that was accessible. So our first space had stairs. And we knew that the second space that we moved into, because that was all that we could afford at that time, and everybody that was using the space was able to use the stairs. But our new warehouse, all ground level, anybody can use it. So like starting like right from the point of where you're locating your business. And then in smaller ways. So we model self-care. That is the biggest thing that you can do. So the executives at some days all model self-care. When we are on our periods or experiencing a flare, we say so, we take the day off, or we make accommodations for ourselves and work in a way that feels good for us. Honestly, leading by example. So by having those conversations, that means that other people that work with you understand that that is okay to say. And so they also understand, we all have one common goal of some days, which is to grow and to destigmatize period pain. And so at the end of the day, as long as we are all committed to that mission, I don't care how you get your work done. I don't need you to sit in front of me and work. I trust you. I hired you because I trust you. And if there's a mutual reciprocal relationship of respect, then you know that those people are honest with you and you know that they know their bodies. And so when they need a day off, we say, absolutely. There's no like rigid structure around like how many days you take off or how they're taken off. If you want to rearrange your schedule to accommodate your health or something else in your life that's important to you, that's fine. Whatever you need to do to be well is the way that you are most helpful to us. Our team being well is what inspires us to create change and to connect with people. That is how we connect with people, is by modeling wellness. And so how would I expect anybody to do anything different or to buy into the some days idea if we weren't deeply practicing that?
So wait, you don't have like, okay, you're only allowed 10 sick days and we're going to track it on a list. And once you hit 9, you'll get a warning. You don't, it's just, if you need a day, take a day.
Yeah.
Wow. When I worked at four other people, I couldn't even take, I could, but it was so hard to actually get the vacation day like that. Not about my period or not about something personal. Just I'm legitimately allowed this, but all this work has to get done. And so I can just picture, you know, the other side of it saying, but what about how will the work get done if suddenly you have somebody like, oh, now today all of a sudden I can't work? It doesn't sound like it's been a problem for you though.
No, I mean, it's about company culture, which is why it's going to take a really long time for corporate structures to have those shift. I mean, shifting corporate culture is almost impossible. It is possible, but it's slow. And so when you're starting a business, it's really important that you start with the type of culture that you want to carry through as you grow. And for some days, that culture is around, if you're out, I know that I'm going to be out sometime this month. I also have a period, for example. So I'm going to help you. If you're out for a day, I can cover your tasks. I will take on a little bit extra. I know that you're going to cover me. And so there's just this like reciprocal relationship where everybody is supporting everybody, understanding that we all have off days. And so the time that I put into caring for your work or supporting you in your off days is will be returned by somebody, whether that's not you because you're unavailable or whatever. It's a team effort as opposed to individualistic, which is also rooted in capitalism and colonialism. This idea that like we each have our one job that we are responsible for and we are not allowed to ask for help. That is absolutely an individualistic approach. And when we approach business and work from a team perspective, it allows a lot more space for community care.
Yes, I'm not Indigenous. I have been learning from Indigenous community the idea that economy and wealth we can take a community or a communal view of it, worldview of it. That is not just how can I and maybe my spouse and my kids have enough money to retire on and live until we die, but how does this benefit financially and holistically everybody in our community, in our country, or what have you? So yeah, that call to decolonize our thinking, that I think is really important, Lux. I appreciate that. Talking about company culture, I really love so many things that you say about what your beliefs and your values are on the Someday's website. And one of the things it says is that you're intersectional, sustainable, and radical. And under radical, I'm going to quote this. It says, from our advocacy to our trauma-informed approach to pain relief, we're pushing boundaries and fighting for a future we want to be a part of. Like fire. Oh my gosh. you talked at the beginning about how there's all these awareness and fundraisers for diseases that they're tragic diseases, but they're actually not even as prevalent as endometriosis is. And so can you tell us about this campaign, this first ever campaign that you're doing, 30 Days for Endo Challenge? What is that and how can we support it?
Yeah, we're so excited about the 30 Days for Endo Challenge. I mean, I'm deeply personally excited. I was in the car the other day talking to my partner and I was like, I can't believe that we might actually be able to make a difference in this thing that ruins my life. Like, it feels so surreal in some ways. But we launched this campaign and essentially we've partnered with the Women's Health Collective of Canada. And so they're made up of three other organizations who have been doing independent research and studies and awareness things around women's health specifically. And they've all come together to share their information with each other under this umbrella. And essentially what we're doing is we've launched a 30-day challenge for the month of March. So we have a kit that we use on our website. It's called Better Cycle Kit. And so that's actually like it's a castor pack that we've redesigned. So castor packs are widely accepted as like a natural remedy for pelvic pain, endometriosis, relief. It was one of the first products that I used when I was in my early 20s that made a significant difference in my life. It was like pulling teeth trying to do this treatment because you need to do it every day for 45 minutes. And so it took me like 3 years before I actually ended up doing a 30-day stint of it. And so at Someday's, we developed this so that it's actually like this like really enjoyable spa-like thing. So it's a jelly. There's this like soft bamboo belly wrap that can be wrapped all the way around and tied around your abdomen. And then this chamomile scented heat pad. So it just feels like a dream to use. And so we know that it's a challenge to do those sort of treatments. We know that it's a challenge to step outside of our productivity and listen to our bodies and take that time for ourselves. And so the 30-day challenge is the challenge to use this kit every day for 30 days. And in doing so, we're going to share it for awareness. So there'll be like posting and sharing and a hashtag on Instagram so that you can find other people in the community and obviously connect over. There's a lot of sharing of healthcare advice for how to find help within the endo community. And so we thought this would be a great opportunity for those people to connect and then also to bring larger awareness. And then there's actually a page that's linked in our Instagram bio and on our website where you can register for the challenge and then you can actually raise money from your friends and family. 100% of the registration fee and 100% of the profits from the Better Cycle Kit are all being donated to WHCC.
That is really amazing. And I think that what is a differentiator too is I can tell when I see your products, it is designed by people who have periods and it is not designed. Like there's been stories I heard from you and Dominique and on your website around duct taping heating pads to your stomach to try to get something that, because you're forced to have to go to school or work to not get fired and whatnot. It seems simple, but even from a design principle, if even the men just followed human-centered design principles, you would shape the heating pad different. Like you would shape it like your body shape. And you folks have done that at Someday's and you can make it sort of, well, I don't know if it's portable exactly, but at least, you know, better than a heating pad, better than a water bottle, right? That you carry around with you. So genius and yet so obvious if you just thought.
So simple.
Right?
I know. Well, I was like, it is. It's just crazy to me. There's this one thing that we talk about at Someday's. And that thing is that it really takes so little to make us happy because we have been so ignored for so long. that we literally chopped the corners off a heat pad and we're like, that's it. That's all we needed. We just needed something that wasn't rectangular because we can't sit with it. Like, it's so basic. And in some ways, it's so exciting that the changes needed are so small in order to positively affect the outcome. But in some ways, it's also so sad that those changes were so small and that nobody has ever considered us when making a heat pad. Like, it's just incredible. And that also goes for, we notice a lot that when we talk about validating pain, that it only takes one line or something really small for people to feel this like deep sense of validation. And it's moving. We're so happy that it resonates with people. And that's the whole point. But it is deeply concerning that it is that easy to make somebody feel validated and they haven't been able to find that in their entire lives.
I didn't think about it from that angle before, Lex. That's an interesting one. Because I have saved more Instagram posts from Someday's site than any other site because Wow. It's just like bang, bang, bang. I'm like, yes, that is truth. That is fact. And you're right. Like, it's blown my mind, but in a way, it shouldn't have blown my mind because it should have been more okay or it shouldn't have been so like, this is the first time I've ever heard this, but it is the first time I've ever heard this. So yeah, again, speaking of Instagram, actually, but how do you want people to follow up and keep supporting this journey? Because I can imagine there's more I want to talk about, but we can't talk forever. We could, but we're not going to talk forever. How might people get more information or just support your journey and Someday's journey? What's the best way to support you and also get in touch with you if that's possible?
The best way to support us is to share our content. I mean, that's what we're trying to get across. We're just trying to share a message that period pain is not normal, that your pain is worth investigating, and these are the reasons you've been invalidated your whole life, and this is why you deserve to be validated. So absolutely, you can follow us on Instagram at GetSomeDays. And then basically we're on all platforms as the same thing. So we're on TikTok, all those sorts of Facebook, all under Get Some Days. But Instagram is really where our community lives. And you can also DM us there. And there's also a contact form. So it's easy to get in touch with us through Instagram.
Awesome. Okay. And we will have links to all the different platforms, but particularly we'll highlight the Instagram one on the show notes. So if you're looking for Get Some Days, you're going to find them and our show notes. And our show notes will be housed on my website, which is changinglenses.ca/podcast. So I am really sad that I have to let you go. But before I let you go, I wonder if you could add on to the already incredible value that you provided to us, maybe just some parting words of encouragement for anybody who is right now sitting on their soft pillow or experiencing pain or endometriosis and didn't know that they were not alone until now. What encouragement could you share?
I think that the most important thing that we as individuals can do to shift the perspective and the conversation around period pain and periods, and I think that can also relate to disability and chronic illness, is to validate ourselves. It's very easy to internalize the beliefs that we've been taught our entire lives about our need to be productive and our need to contribute in the same way as everybody else. And the minute that we stop expecting that from ourselves, we give permission to other people to do the same.
Beautiful and powerful. Excellent way to sum that up. Thank you, Lux. It has been a joy and an honor to have you as a guest on Changing Lenses today. Thank you for being here. And thank you to everybody who's listening. You are a true Jedi friend. I'm glad that you joined us. If Lux helped to change your lens on periods, as she's changing mine, and you're wondering what you can do to support, you've heard her say just to share all the Instagram posts or TikTok or wherever you are on. And also please head over to wherever you listen to your podcasts. I know not every podcast platform has this, but Apple does. Wherever you can, leave a review and give us a rating. This really helps get this message out and helps people find Changing Lenses and hear the Jedi messages even more. And maybe you know someone who doesn't know Someday's yet, but you think could really benefit from hearing Lux's message. Please share this podcast episode with them as well. Share their Instagram site at GetSomeDays. I think you can hear that Lux is very inspiring, very encouraging, and I'm sure that they would appreciate hearing this too. So thank you. Miigwech, daudie, xiexie, merci. That's a wrap. This episode of Changing Lenses was produced and hosted by me, Rosie Young, with associate production by William Liu, on land that was taken from many Indigenous nations, including the Anishinaabe, the Huron-Wendat, the Mississaugas of the Credit, and the Haudenosaunee Confederacy. Today, it is still the home of many diverse First Nations, Inuit, and Métis people, with whom I seek to reconcile by learning the true history of colonization, including things that seemed legal and honorable, like treaties, but were often marked by fraud and coercion. I'm changing my lens by learning to see land, creation, even business and economy through Indigenous worldviews. And I'm making new friends and building relationships with Indigenous neighbors, cousins, aunties, and uncles in a genuine desire to know, love, and honor them and live together in peace. This podcast is one way I'm sharing what I learn to help settler immigrant folks decolonize our thinking and respond to the calls to action from the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. Miigwech, dojie, xiexie, merci, and thank you.